going on here?
Earth's resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
Still I am, Paul!
Fan Effect.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fan Effect, KSL podcast brought to you by the Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theater. Is the best place to see a movie in Utah, and we're so happy to see that movies are back and that the box office is having all kinds of record-breaking weekends. It's been a while since we've been able to say that. Certainly, the movie we're going to talk about today on Fan Effect is going to do very well at the box office, I believe.
It better.
Yeah.
I don't know how it couldn't. It's a Marvel movie, and it's got Thor, and it's got Taika Waititi, and it's got Jane Foster. And we're talking about Thor, Love and Thunder, the fourth movie in the Thor sequence of the Marvel Universe, Cinematic Universe, the 29th movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in total.
The
which means
featuring Thor.
Yeah.
You're getting to a point where you can't jump in anymore. It's almost like if you haven't joined the Marvel train at this point, you're probably never going to join it. But it's a lot of action. I mean, this is what happens with comic books. I mean, this is kind of what we expect. This was the journey that it was going to take to this point once they decided to commit to a series of movies that tell an overarching story in the universe. But that's what we wanted. That's what made comic books so popular in the first place, was the serialized storytelling and the interconnectedness. And I've made the argument in multiple podcasts of why Spider-Man doesn't work as his own universe. He is part of a larger universe. But until Sony relinquishes, we'll probably never get to see this truly fulfilled. Nevertheless, all right. So welcoming, I'd like you to welcome for the podcast this time, of course, my co-host Kellyanne Halverson from KSL Podcast and the Church News Podcast and whatever else they ask her to do, because she's really willing and great at everything.
Long as let me keep watching movies with you. As long as I still do this.
Awesome. And then joining us for It's been a while. Welcome back, Chris Provost from ProvostParkPass.com.
Yeah.
We're missing Amanda.
I know. She's home with Miles right now. But I'm so happy to be back because it's been a while and I love this podcast, you guys. I love it. I love what you guys talk about.
We appreciate that. And, you know, we're just a fun fan community here in Utah. Yeah. And I would say you're probably like at the forefront for anybody who's a FanX fan or that goes to FanX knows who you are. Yeah. Whether or not they know about your Provost Park Pass,
yes,
they know you from FanX.
Very true. Very, very true. Absolutely.
Speaking of which, what's your socks today?
Today's socks, it's sushi. So little dogs and sushi and surfboards.
There we go.
I wore British socks on Sunday before the 4th of July.
Ooh, is that
British flags? Well, no, because on the 3rd, we're British citizens, yeah, but it's on the 4th, we're Americans. So.
Okay.
And I got relatives that live in Britain. So any rate, we're glad to have you here and
thank you.
We're looking forward. Now, we've decided to, we're just going to spoil, like, we like the movie. We can give a thing, but people are really listening to this. I've learned that a lot of our listeners, when they listen to this is when they're either leaving the movie or like a day after they've seen the movie. They want to see what we thought, too, and then see if they felt the same way. And so that's what we're just going to get right into that part of it. So
massive spoiler warnings.
Just in case, you know, you were worried, we're going to throw out things that are going to spoil you all along the way and we're not going to feel bad about it. So you've been warned. Here we go. All right. Let's play a clip from Thor, Love and Thunder.
There's a maniac who seeks to end us all. I'm putting together
the greatest team ever.
Are you packed?
Yes.
We've got Korg.
He's my best friend.
Yes. There's my ex-girlfriend, Jane. Valkyrie.
This is the best day.
Guardians.
I am Groot.
And giant goats.
Oh, look at those. They are wonderful.
Yes, they are. They also scream quite a lot.
Okay. Now, if that doesn't get your blood pumping,
it's got rock and roll,
it's got
seriously
humor, it's got skinny Thor again, he's gotten rid of his dad bod, he shakes the big chains, you know, he's holding back the Milano, that's kind of his resistance band training is a spaceship. So we get Thor back to the way he ought to look. I know that, I think that will actually disappoint a few people because they really liked Fat Thor
or Thor.
I'm okay with it.
Right. No, I actually saw Thor, either the first one or the second one. I saw it with with Cheryl, our boss.
Yeah.
And I remember when this was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When he has like the shirtless scene. I was like, well, you just got your money's worth for this movie.
We're okay with it. And even Valkyrie and Jane seems to be okay
That's
with
true.
It.
That's true. Yeah. Valkyrie yeah. didn't seem to mind, did she? Well, all right. So the plot of Thor, Love, and Thunder, this is the sequel to Ragnarok. It's set a couple of years later. It's set after Avengers Endgame. Mm-hmm. And it's 8 years after Thor and Jane broke up.
Yes.
So in the Marvel Cinematic Universe timeline, it's set in about 2024 is what I was – as I was doing a little bit of deeper
really?
Digging.
So it's ahead of us. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the whole universe has been ahead of us.
Yeah, they're in 2023.
So. Oh, I didn't know that. You guys are teaching me. Thank you.
Well,
thank
that was
you.
The five-year gap from Endgame.
Oh, that makes sense. Oh, yeah. I feel like a bad fan. That's okay. I'm still learning Marvel.
I'm actually surprised we haven't had – a movie that explores during the blip yet. At least not that I can think of it. And if there's been a part of the cinematic universe, it's only been a scene in a different movie. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that would be kind of – because the closest we got was Black Widow, which took place between Civil War and Infinity War.
And you see the transition there.
Mm-hmm. But we haven't had one where there's, you know, people dealing with – the fact that half the people are dead and half the heroes are gone.
That'd be a good Disney Plus series.
Well, it's probably already worse. I can't be the first person who's thought of this along the Marvel cinematic lines. And maybe there's a reason that they didn't. I don't know. Part of me kind of likes just having a gap. Mm-hmm. Everything mm-hmm. equates to Star Wars. So here's our first Star Wars reference 6 minutes in. Some parts are fine to be left unexplored. Like, it's fine to just have this gap where we don't really know anything about it. It's okay. We've survived this long without it.
Kind of the ambiguity there makes it also you can run different directions as well.
They did talk about it, though, a little bit in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Mm-hmm. You know, when he's at the wedding for Rachel,
right.
And the doctor asks him, he's like, was there any other way? He's like, you know, the last 5 years has been rough. And he's like, there was no other way. Mm-hmm. And so they tap dance around that, the blip, but they don't really get into it like what you're saying.
Well, and that's I think it could be interesting. I think the things that would be interesting to me watching a movie about the blip or taking place during the blip is just how everybody was coping with everything mm-hmm. and how everything is reshaped, because we saw the effects of that in Endgame. Man, did we get sidetracked fast from Thor, Love, and Thunder.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, we're already on a tangent.
Nevertheless, so back to the thing. We know when it's set. And it starts out, Thor's with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And were you guys surprised the Guardians were in it so little?
No.
I kind of was.
Were you? I wasn't, because this was going to be Thor's movie, right? And then they're going to have the Guardians movie. I was wondering how they're going to do that, because when it ended, you know, Thor and the Guardians left together at the end of Endgame.
Well, I knew that he wasn't going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I don't know if I read that or if I just... It didn't seem like a James Gunn wants another character in his little group. And I'm okay with that. But I thought the way that Endgame had sort of hitched him together so much, I kind of thought we'd have, you know, maybe they would weave throughout the whole movie, even though they weren't going to be central to the plot. I just thought they'd be there so we get to see some of the silly Asgardians of the Galaxy kind of.
Yeah.
Well, and even like in the advertisements, you have Star-Lord talking about his group and how much he loves them, and Thor kind of wiggling
leans
his
in.
Head in there. You'd think they would have been featured a little bit more with how much they're featured in the trailers.
Prominently showed them a lot in the trailers, Guardians. Right. So I was a little, but I'm
going to
say this.
That was the thing. So I worried that there were some fans who wanted to see a lot of the Guardians are going to go to Thor and be like, oh. It was like when I went to see X-Men The Last Stand, and I knew that James Marsden, who'd played Cyclops in the first two X-Men movies, was doing Superman Returns, and so I knew he wasn't going to be in it much, but he was in it some. But it was like he goes and he's sad, and he looks into the lake, and then he's dead.
That was it.
I was like, what? Why did you even put him in here then?
But I'm going to say this. This is interesting. Disney is tying everything together. So down at Epcot, they have a brand new ride called Cosmic Rewind. It's Guardian Galaxy Cosmic Rewind, right?
And no, this is new, right?
It's brand new. It's in Epcot, okay? It's all based on Guardians of the Galaxy, and you're in a ship with the Guardians of the Galaxy, and you're going through the different parts of the galaxy, and you're going through a hexagon.
You like the way they warp travel.
And so in the movie now, you see them, when they take off, the ship takes off, they go through that exact same hexagon that you go through in the roller coaster down in Epcot. So they're tying, I mean, it's all being tied
together. To be fair, they hexagoned in the... in the previous movies too. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, they're trying to draw obvious visual cues.
Everything together, yeah.
But that's what we want, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We wouldn't want it to fly through like a circle or a square because then people would be like,
"What is going on?"
Yeah, that's not supposed to happen.
One other thing, though, I thought was very interesting for me. I don't know if you guys saw this. Maybe it's there. I just haven't noticed it. But you know, when the movie starts, it always got Marvel, and then you see between the letters little clips of different movies.
Yes.
But in the M, they had Moon Knight. And Moon Knight was there at the very beginning, and I was like,
I saw Miss Marvel as well, which I'm loving the series, by the way.
Miss Marvel,
I saw her pop up.
Oh, so I didn't see her, because I saw Moon Knight. I'm like, it's official. There it is.
What did you think of playing the Marvel theme on the electric guitar?
Oh.
Loved it.
That was amazing.
That sets the tone for the movie right there. That's what you're going to get. You're going to get, Taika Waititi called it, he wanted to do kind of an 80s love story with the way it looked would be similar to Conan the Barbarian, and that's, you know, the super buff looking, really painted posters with, you know, overly defined.
Bright colors.
Yeah, and rock and roll, you know, it was, I think I said this to somebody as I was leaving, like this, if you've lived in Utah long enough, you know the station, K-Bear 101, the rock station. It's been the rock station for, you know, since I was a kid. And I was like, man, that soundtrack would have come right off K-Bear 101.
Straight out of it. Yeah.
So those are the things that you can look forward to.
And Jane Foster's back. Natalie Portman's back. She's buff. She's wonderful. She's
and she
beautiful.
Actually buffed up the role. That was not CG on her muscles.
She wanted. She's like, I'm going to push it as far as I can, which made me so happy.
They had to cheat to make her taller, though. They couldn't. That's not something she could just lift weights and grow to be 6 feet tall. So story-wise, we pick up there. Thor's kind of trying to figure out what his role is now that Thanos is vanquished. He's hanging with the Guardians. He meditates a lot until they need him to save the day. Then he crashes in and destroys everything and gives a heartfelt speech about how we all fought together, even though he pretty much did everything at that point.
I love Nebula just like rolling her eyes at that.
She was all full of rage.
Yeah,
Nebula was, but I don't know if that's something that we'll get more. So this takes place before Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, at least what I read. So as far as when we see that will take place after
these events.
Oh, they're filming it, so it's probably another year or two. I don't know. I'm like weird. The Guardians are maybe my least favorite of the whole set.
I don't like the
I like them, but I don't.
Of Marvel?
Of
the Guardians?
Of all the Marvel's groups and movies, like the Guardians is my least favorite.
I don't know about that.
That's okay. I don't blame anybody. I'm not saying people shouldn't be their favorite. It's just, it's not mine. I've just never really connected with them like that. I like some of the elements, but, you know, when Chris Pratt screwed up Thanos, I was like, how can people be a fan of this guy?
Yeah, but it's what had to happen.
Story-wise and all those things. That's part of the thing is you get him to the edge. But it was like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
You couldn't hold your temper in check for one more second. I don't know. Any rate. So we've got Thor with the Guardians. We've got Jane Foster on Earth going through cancer treatment.
Yeah.
We kind of like find this out in a roundabout way. Yes. This is based on, the Jason Aaron story of his run in the comic called The Mighty Thor. And there was a stretch. This was a part that I wasn't collecting at the time, so I didn't read deep into the story. But there's a new Thor, a completely masked Thor, and it's a female Thor. And we don't know who it is. And that's the Marvel style.
Yeah.
And then it usually ends up turning out being someone you should have guessed along.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Hulk turned out to be a Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah.
Jane Foster turns out to be the Mighty Thor. And I believe this was in a stretch where Thor was unworthy to hold the hammer also.
Oh, wow.
There's a stretch where Thor is unworthy because of something he witnessed and didn't do anything about. There was a whole thing. And so Jane actually wielded Mjolnir for a while. Stormbreaker has always in the comics belonged to a character named Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah, Beta Ray Bill.
And it's like a hammer, only it looks like an anvil crossed with like a Green Lantern is what the top of Beta Ray Bill's golden hammer looks like. So that's Stormbreaker. So obviously the Marvel Cinematic Universe has departed from that a little bit. And we've got Stormbreaker as a giant axe as tall as Thor, made from Groot. And the ore from a star. I think it's the same ore that Mjolnir is made from.
Yes.
But it's from the heart of a star.
Yeah.
Which movie was it? They go back and they craft that I can see the image in my head.
Infinity War.
Yeah, it's Infinity War.
Okay.
Now, speaking of that, Eitri, the giant played by Peter Dinklage,
yeah,
and Games Master played by Jeff Goldblum were supposed to appear in Thor: Love and Thunder, and then they had their scenes cut.
They had them scenes cut for runtime.
Probably.
Yeah.
Somebody said there's a 4-hour cut that we'll never get to see.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, right now it's pretty long. It's 2 hours and 5 minutes. You know, not too bad for some of the stuff they've had recently.
Right.
But it's worth it. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. We have to go back though to Jane Foster for a second. I have to talk about this because I was curious because I read that comic, and I was wondering how they can do that because in the comic book she has cancer. And she's dying. And mm-hmm. she ends up holding the hammer. And the hammer is actually, it makes her healthy when she's holding the hammer, but it's actually killing her. Mm-hmm. It's killing her.
Now, this is in the movie or the comic?
The comics.
It was in the movie, too.
Yes. And I was wondering, how were they going to portray that in the movie? Because it's a very serious topic. It doesn't heal her. It's actually making it worse.
Mm-hmm.
So she
momentarily feels good,
yes,
but then it's
yes.
Worse. Oh, ooh.
And so they brought that up, though, in the movie, and I thought they handled it very well in the movie. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, no, because as you described that, I thought, oh, well, yeah, that's how they did it in the movie, was it turned out that when she dropped it, she dropped and could barely even crawl herself back over to the hammer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She did not have to deal with in the comic was the broken Mjolnir, which is what we had to deal with here. So Jane finds out that she's, you know, stage 4. Well, you know, that's the only 4 that we know of so far.
Yeah, right.
That's her trying to justify it to her former assistant, but now doctor. Now I can't think of her name. Darcy. Played by Kat Dennings.
Kat Dennings, yeah.
But so it was nice to see her in a short cameo. And so Jane travels to New Asgard.
Which has now become a tourist destination.
Of the universe now, too, not just the planet. And we get to see another classic play from the Hemsworth brother, the other Hemsworth brother, and Matt Damon. And it was, I looked up who played.
Sam Neill.
It was Sam Neill, right?
Sam Neill is playing Odin.
Plays Odin. And then they're so keen on plays that even when disaster happens later, I think the people need us. They need us to do another play.
But they actually added more because they had Hela come back too in this play, which I was surprised. I did not know this was going to happen.
Who was Hela?
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy,
which
yes.
Which was fantastic.
That's right.
So, and it was so cheesy and wonderful.
It was amazing.
It was a Taika Waititi film. So I will say this because my feelings about Ragnarok, the first time I saw it, I laughed and I was like, that was funny. But it was also like the first real hard veer into comedy. Like Guardians was a veer into comedy, but Thor Ragnarok was like an all in, like we left the road here.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a bit to, because, you know, Thor is always a serious character and.
But he's a melodramatic character, so it works so well with the
comedy.
But he
is, but he's melodramatic, and it's just how he is. Like, he speaks in scripture talk, like, verily thee.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. It is ripe for parody. I mean, there's a whole thing in, it's called Twisted Toy Fair Theater. It's kind of what Robot Chicken is based on, if you've seen the show Robot Chicken.
Sure.
But they take these Mego toys from the 70s that were these superhero dolls. They're poorly done. And then they do like comic panels where they'd pose them and then write goofy stories about it. And so Thor was always speaking in the verily thee and thine. And it was highly comedic, you know, like there's a parody of Scream and the ghost face is talking to Thor on the phone. He's like, I see you're making popcorn. And he's like, yay, verily, tonight art a blockbuster night, you know? So he does lends it to comedy, but nobody'd ever leaned into it as part of like the actual like canon.
Now you were saying though it took you a while to get used to that.
Yeah. So the first time through, I laughed, but I was like, it was funny, but you could take it a little seriously. Like, it's okay to take it a little bit seriously. It didn't feel like he took any of it seriously.
Well, they did that.
So there's
more with
these major things happening. His hammer gets crushed. He loses an eye. All this stuff happens, but it was almost like, oh, look, Thor lost an eye. That's so funny. Or, oh, look.
That's interesting that you think that. I think Thor is a very complex character. And he has had, I think, suffered more tragedy than any of the other Avengers. I mean, everything he's ever known or loved, he's lost. Mm-hmm. Everything.
Kind of pointed that out in this film, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that, so it was, for me, I thought that was fun. Ragnarok, for me, is top three Marvel movie of all time. I loved it. I loved what they did to the character. I felt like we finally got to see I felt like they finally hit their stride with Thor, showcasing him how good he is and how a little bit he's a little bit in his own world. You know, he just doesn't see things going on. I know this might be shocking to you too. This new movie. I felt what you were saying. I felt like you were saying you didn't think they did enough. I thought they leaned a little bit too much in the comedy. I felt like sometimes Thor seemed a little bit like almost like a child, like a little bit of like an idiot, and it played for it was good laughs. But he is a little bit of a serious character. So I don't know if I had to rank them. I'm going to rank them now. The four Thor movies. Okay. Ragnarok is number
Love
one.
Love Ragnarok. Yes.
And then this one is number two. And then the original Thor is number three, and then Dark World would be number four. And so I think they missed the mark on Dark World. They just didn't know how to handle that character,
yes,
I felt like.
Yes.
But I love what they're doing here. But I wanted Thor to be taken a little more serious in this film.
That's how I felt about Ragnarok. Well, and this time, since I know it's Waititi, I'm like, I know he's not going to go too serious. But they also were able to take some of the comedic elements like in Endgame. I thought Endgame... Yeah. Versus Infinity War, because Infinity War, he was kind of serious again.
Yes.
You know, well, I guess they find him, and then there's the whole thing. Whenever he's with the Guardians, he was goofy, but when he wasn't with the Guardians, he was serious.
Yeah.
But I think that the change in his character in this film is more of the uncomfortableness with the change around him and the awkwardness around him. He's just awkward. He's not used to not having his family, not having as much of his power. The whole Thanos and Jane breakup and everything kind of... has him questioning himself. So I don't see him as coming off as stupid or anything like that. It's more of just like in this weird, awkward change.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I think, though, in this film, Love and Thunder, the thing about Ragnarok and the Love and Thunder, Ragnarok didn't really have a major baddie, a heavy that he was really going against.
It was such a good heavy in this.
This, Gore.
Yes,
yeah.
Christian
the God Butcher.
Wait. Hela smashed his hammer and cut out his eye. How do you say that's not a baddie?
But nobody's
been able to hurt him like that.
But it's like Loki. It's like
I never felt that the character was developing.
They didn't spend the whole movie chasing her though. Maybe that's where it is, because you got the whole detour over to Battle World with Hulk.
Yes,
but I mean, as far as a baddie, she wasn't bad. She killed all the Asgardians.
I think I respect her, but I felt like Gore on this screen was heavy when he was on the screen. And I feel like sometimes I love Marvel movies, but I feel like sometimes they miss the mark with their bad guys. Mm-hmm. It's just that the bad guy just wants a shiny thing and they're going to go for it. They don't really explain this. This one, I felt like they really hit the home run in Spider-Man Homecoming with the Vulture. You could understand that bad guy. And I think here with Gore, I thought they did a very good job of this. They changed him from the comic book a little bit. They had to change him because...
they changed his looks because apparently he looked too much like Voldemort.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So look-wise, they went a little bit different.
Well, you know, in the comics, he's actually... It's part of a symbiote, like Venom.
I see.
And so I think that Sony has that... property.
Yes.
So they kind of changed it, and he gets this power from the necromancer sword.
The necro sword.
But I thought you could understand. He didn't realize he was a bad guy. He thought what he was doing was the right thing to do.
Well,
to save people from pain.
For the rest of the gods' sake, it's not their fault that he happened to worship the one idiot god.
Yes.
And that he happened to run into it. Well, okay. So there was more, but you know. He didn't happen to get. He wasn't lucky enough to have, you know, one of the better gods, kind of a thing.
Yeah. For like a recap, like, you know, he's going through tribulation, and he has his daughter, and
he prays to the god that he believes he'll spare him, and then he doesn't. So immediately, you can already see like different parallels. Oh, I'm sure that people will connect with this. You know, there's times where you hope for something, and you pray to a higher power, and it doesn't go the way you hoped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
only. How often do you get a chance to then like actually go talk to them in person and be like, hey, what's the deal? And then have them turn out to be like, oh, yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, there's more of you that will come back and worship me.
On a one hand, as they were going in there, I was like, are we going to get the standard Hollywood thing of look how idiotic people are who trust in higher powers? And because that's often a subtext when they're trying to couch it in some noble thing of no, we're exploring the higher meaning of you know, like of unmet expectations and things like that. And
But I'm like, yeah, you got people who don't believe in any kind of a God trying to write about what it's like for people who do. That doesn't work for me always, because it always ends up coming across in a mocking way. And I wondered if for a second that was where it was kind of going with this, of like, oh, look, he prayed to a God. The God didn't answer, and God didn't care.
They could have leaned into it, but then here comes Thor, another God that's coming in and saying, no, you have to protect your people. You have to go in.
Which he abandoned and left to, you know, Tessa, so he could go do whatever. I'm just saying that, like, that was my concern as it went in, was, is this going to be another one? The Simpsons does it a lot. Yeah. I loved The Simpsons, but that was what finally got me to stop watching it, was just like, look, I get there's a way you can parody faithful people and how they act in culture, because there is culturally some goofy stuff that all people who are devout or religious do. It just is. And especially to people who are outside of it, it looks really weird. Mm-hmm. I get that. But then when it takes the turn to mocking and just like, well, they're stupid because they do this, that's where you lose me. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know if that's where this was kind of, if it was trying to go for that higher plane.
Did you feel it went
there? No, I think they backed off a little bit. But the Council of the Gods didn't help. When they go to the world on Omni Planet or whatever
the
they call
City
it
or whatever,
and Zeus was just like, "All right, everybody, get ready for the orgy next month." And it's like, "Come on!"
But I think having Thor
there is what
balanced it out. Is Thor is coming and saying, "No, we have to take care of people. Let's go take care of this god killer, this god butcher."
Right. But what I'm saying is, overly goofy comedy though.
Yeah, but I'm saying they could have gone that way, but they did balance it.
And
even the believers at the front.
Yeah, I think for those, just in case if somebody is listening to this spoiler and hasn't seen it, the plot is that he's killing the gods and he's trying to get to the center of the universe or whatever. And
Infinity.
And it's been told that the first person there is going to be granted one wish. Mm-hmm. And his wish, what he's trying to do at that time, because he's so angry, is he's going to go wish all gods to be dead.
Yeah.
And so.
Right. Well, at first he's killing them. And then you think that he wants to just kill them all, but then as we go along with the plot, we realize that there's a more efficient way to kill them all rather than hunting them down, is you can get rid of them all at once.
Yeah.
And so what we don't know is what does he need? Like, why does he keep killing them one by one if his end goal is eternity, getting to the character eternity? How's he going to do that? And then we find out how Thor fits in with all of that.
And now
is of course that Stormbreaker is the key. Why Stormbreaker is the key, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because Mjolnir should be the same.
Well I'm going to say this is a big, huge, giant, massive spoiler. So massive one.
We're good.
I thought Hollywood is going to. I thought I had figured it out. I thought they were going to do, because they say that the first one there is going to get their wish. Mm-hmm. And I thought the whole time, I'm okay. Really, what's going to happen is that I thought Thor was going to get there. And I thought he was going to grant the wish to get rid of the cancer from
Jane.
Would be okay. And I thought, this is exactly how this is going to go. And the whole movie seemed to be leading up to that. But that's not what happened.
Which I loved.
Yeah, which it was heartbreaking.
It would be the easy way.
Yeah, it would have been the easy way out.
Yes.
But I was really surprised, because Gore gets the wish. And it was amazing to see how they were taking that pathway to go down. Because I think that everybody expected that. And that's not what happened. It was really interesting to me to watch that.
Well, and it was great to see the juxtaposition of Jane has cancer, she's dying, and then the Necrosword, yes, it will go and help you kill gods, but it curses the one who is wielding it.
Yes.
So kind of the cancer of the Necrosword, the cancer of the rage, the jealousy that is consuming Gore and literally
that's
killing him and changing him. So I loved that, you know, the cancer of hate and the cancer of, you know, physical cancer. And
well, but it was also because Mjolnir was killing her too, more than it was before. So each time each one of them held the power totem, it was killing them more, but one wanted to do good with their power and one did not want to do
good
with
their power. And I think Gore even kind of mentioned that. He's like, look, you're
same cancer.
Yeah, you're dying. This is, and you're using this, the tool of a god, but it's really, it's killing you because it doesn't care. And it was so, it brought it back, because you wanted to think that Mjolnir is 100% like going to, I wanted it to save her.
You so bad. Like, story arc wise, character wise.
Yeah.
And and particularly since we got a little bit more of like the romantic backstory of Thor.
Yes, I want to talk about
Jane's
that after
romance.
The break, though, because I'd like to go over all
okay.
that. So let's take a break now. And then when we come back, we'll talk about the romantic arc between Thor and multiple
things in the movie because it wasn't just Jane. And that was one of the funnier parts that I thought of the movie was how they dealt with all of Thor's, I don't know if it's romantic entanglements, but yeah. At the very least, emotional attachment. So we'll talk about that when we get back here on Fan Effect. All right, Fan Effect segment two. We're talking about Thor, Love, and Thunder. We left off on our discussion as we came to the romantic entanglements. We talked about we thought that Thor was going to use his wish to bring Jane back, the woman he loved, the one that got away, the one that came back and then looked like him. For a narcissist, that was probably oddly attractive in a completely weird way. As not only this was a girl that he loves, but now she looks just like him, who he also loves a lot.
They had, I thought they did like a recap. You know, they went back and showed. In fact, at first it happened so fast. They're going back to show when they first met. It would have been during Thor, the first movie, right after the first movie, and it showed them how that they were like going to like Halloween parties together and watching movies together.
And part of that was funny was seeing Natalie Portman just being like the silly girlfriend kind of a thing. Like where, and it was obviously, this is where the Taika Waititi comedy works for me. See, having silly asides like this works. The scene that I had such a hard time with was the first scene in Ragnarok where he's talking to Surtur, the fire demon, and he like twirls around. He's like, just a minute, let me get back. That was the part. But it's like, but where it works really well is stuff like this, where they're like having dinner, they're going roller skating together. Like they're doing all the silly things that if you've ever watched any movies from the 80s, that's what people did.
Sure. Yeah. 100%.
And they're having popcorn together and watching a movie.
The
and then
it's the montage.
Right. And you watch them start to drift apart as things happen and he has to leave. And then eventually,
and they're both kicking butt, I have to say that. You know, Jane Foster is being an amazing theoretical astrophysicist, whatever her thing is. So
okay, I'm glad you pointed that out. Because she was.
Sorry, female.
That's okay. Yeah. This was a great character. Like, there was, except for that she died at the end. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. But I thought there was a way they maybe could have saved her. But
we wanted her to. But I thought the ending they gave her was appropriate.
She certainly wasn't fridged. This stuff was not to drive Thor as his motivation for the movie. It was the climax to all of the things, and it was her own choice. She had the option to stay behind and die or try to get better of cancer, or grab the hammer and knowing that it would probably be her last time.
Yeah.
And so that was a choice that was in her hands, and it was a good choice, and she ended up helping save the day. And how cool was her being able to split the hammer apart?
Oh my gosh.
To take out a whole bunch of people all at once and then have it come back together.
Was amazing. I'd never seen anything like that.
Did it in the comics
No,
at all,
I don't know.
My understanding is Mjolnir never got smashed in the comics.
Okay. Hela breaks it, and apparently she goes against the hammer. You see all the pieces of the hammer, and they can't lift the pieces up, so they put a little monument around it.
Yeah.
With grass underneath
with
it.
Grass. It was great. But then when she does grab the hammer, it reassembles itself. And she'll swing that hammer, and those pieces will fly off and just magically hit all the bad guys, and then comes back. I thought that was so cool.
Well,
I loved it.
Well, you notice it gathered a bit of the necromancer when that, the necromancer.
Yes, at the end.
The yeah, that was how they were able to destroy the sword.
That's so cool.
The fact that she had the power, so this goes back to the montage, is where Thor whispers to Mjolnir that, you know, you need to protect Jane. And that's what it ended up doing. So Mjolnir calls to Jane. She goes to New Asgard. When she gets near the hammer, all the pieces start swirling on their own. And then the next time you see her is as Thor when they're fighting off the shadow demons in New Asgard, when Thor finally shows up with Stormbreaker. And then Thor sees her for the first time. And this was the part I didn't think about.
ABBA last summer playing, was it that part or?
Oh, yeah.
That was in the montage? Oh, either way, someplace it was playing.
Was a lot of good songs that played, including Rainbow in the Dark, which that was one that was
that
right
was
off
amazing.
The
amazing.
Of course, Welcome to the Jungle, that didn't surprise me. That's in
they
almost
had a,
every
they
movie
They had a
now.
Lot of reference to Guns N' Roses in this movie, though. And like the boy, Heimdall's son, he has in his room.
Isn't
he was
his
wearing,
name Axel.
Yeah, well, that's what he wanted to go by. It was Axel, and then he went. He had a Guns N' Roses T-shirt in his bedroom. He had a Guns N' Roses poster. I'm like, it was like I said, it was a love letter straight
to the 80s. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Heimdall's son. Axel, to me, it's either Axl Rose or Axel the Kid from Modern Family, where in the very first episode, Patricia Heaton's like, you know how you think it'd be cool to name your kid after like a rock star? Well, it's not.
So I loved it.
Back to Jane.
But no, so as I was saying with Jane, she has the ability to command Mjolnir based on what Thor had done, whispering to Mjolnir the way that Odin had whispered to Mjolnir, whosoever is worthy shall possess the power of Thor. Mm-hmm. So both of those things work. So Jane's worthy, or she wouldn't be able to lift the hammer, and she's able to wield the hammer like, you know, Captain America style, and better than Captain America, obviously, because she can do stuff with it. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't using the broken hammer either. He was using the one that they ripped from the timeline.
Yeah.
She uses it well. Thor now, this was the part that I thought was really cool. This was the part that I did not expect, but was highly humorous. So for Thor, it's like Mjolnir's not just a hammer. It's like,
it's an entity.
It's like a thing. It's its own thing. Yeah. So he's like talking to it. And then him talking to it makes Stormbreaker jealous.
Yes.
That to me was the funniest running subplot, was how Stormbreaker was jealous and petty. And like the scene where like it starts floating slowly into the scene, yeah, like, hey, what about me?
And it like is turning its head towards him. It doesn't make sense because it's an axe. It's a Stormbreaker, but it's beautiful.
To me, that was the funniest running subplot, was the jealousy that Stormbreaker had.
And he has, he finally tries to make up Stormbreaker, and he has him, he like poured that beer on the
have your first beer.
Have your first beer. And it was funny. It was really funny.
So that's what time where the goofiness works. Like that's a goofy part of Thor that I think works and is funny. And it's in the moments where you can be lighter. It was always like, you there can be parts where you're serious. This one swung a little bit wildly to where it was like really serious for a long time.
Really,
and then it was like really goofy for a while. Then it was really serious. So it was really a roller coaster.
Which I guess is life. You know, life is like that,
it is,
too. Yeah, yeah.
And I just didn't, I didn't dislike it. I think I kind of like this in a weird way better than Ragnarok. The only thing I think Ragnarok had over it was Loki, which this didn't have any Loki in, mm-hmm, except for the tribute on Thor's back in a tattoo.
That was amazing.
All right, Pete,
see, who's the first fan to get that? We got to watch Twitter for that.
Yeah.
Going into the darkness, though, how terrifying is Gore? So he comes out, it is when we first see Jane, and they're fighting, and it's these dark shadow demon spidery creatures. They move really eerily. It very much reminds
straight
me
out
of like
the movie
19,
Ghost.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like the 1950s, like the giant bugs attacks type movies that they used to do with the cinematography there. And like how much they pull the kids into it. And I totally wrote this down when he goes and takes the kids of Asgard, which was great to see all the different aliens and stuff there. They're part of the children. That was more terrifying than the Candyman in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I was just going to say that. Literally, that was awful.
I would not let my niece see this. This is a little too dark.
In Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, you don't remember that?
The guy kidnaps
the kids and he puts like little lollipops on the. It's terrifying.
And he's knocking on the doors trying to get the kids to come out, and they're hiding.
I don't think I've ever finished that movie.
Oh my goodness!
The movie's pretty good. The musical's not that great, but.
But there's
terrifying.
Oh, so I didn't know. That's not a character I'm familiar with. So that's interesting.
And even like the carriage and stuff, how he takes the kids in. It's very similar to that.
Yeah, this was so Gore has this sword and he could control those shadows, and these shadow beasts come out. And I loved what they did. It was like they were in shadow, so you never got a good light on them to see all. But
which made him terrifying.
Which made him even scarier. You would see one come out, look like spider legs, and then another one, is that like a snake? Or you're not sure. And they're kidnapping the children and taking them. And I thought that was really well done. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, when they get to there, because he took the color out of it.
To the shadow, whatever the
shadow
planet.
When they go to the shadow world, anytime there's light, color shows up. But when there's no color, or when it's dark, it's black and white.
Which was such a great cinematic choice.
It looked great on film.
And like it almost made it hard to watch, though, in those fighting scenes because of it. But it just added to the feel and the layers of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they talk about how dark Gore was. He had the ultimate tragedy, right? And he is, like I said, I think he was a fantastic villain. I honestly think he thought he was doing the right thing.
100%.
I don't think he ever he didn't think of himself as like, this is selfish. I think he was trying to say, I don't want anybody else to suffer.
Yeah.
And he just got, he had a bad experience with this one guy. So he just has done the blanket statement. Like, they all have to go to stop this from everybody. And so his motivation to me was more realistic than a lot of the other villains. And I thought it was interesting when he was like fighting at the end, he was talking to them and he was giving his reasons for what he was doing. And some of them made sense. Like, okay, I could see where he's coming from. I didn't hate him, but I did fear him, if that makes sense.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. You know, it's kind of like you see those memes going around that's like Thanos was right.
Oh,
there
yeah.
are too many of us. We should do something about it. I can see people kind of having that same thought with Gore. There are points that he is making that make sense to some individuals. But it's done in a very creepy, creepy way.
Well, that's good because that's the effect that they want you to feel as you're watching it. For me, I'm kind of more tolerant of villains that would be considered underdeveloped by some. I think you can't – if you're going to take every villain and try to give them their whole backstory so that you don't think that they're the bad guy, they're just misunderstood, I think that works for some. But you know what? I mean, when did – we enjoyed these stories before we needed to know why the villains did what they did. And so I'm okay with having some that are just like – they're just bad.
Oh, yeah, I understand. Like, I think when I talked about this a couple years ago, though, in James Bond, the good James Bond movies are when you have a formidable bad guy.
Right.
And the bad James Bond movies are when it's just, you're just like, this guy's or a girl, I don't care. And I think that Marvel's...
Well, and that's the thing. I was actually getting to that point.
Yeah.
I think you're on, I think we're on the same track. But with Gore, we knew he wasn't going to kill Thor. And we knew that he wasn't going to, you know, eradicate the Marvel universe, right? So we know this going in because when we go into a movie, we're rooting for the good guys to win.
Right.
The question is, what's it going to cost them along the way? It's not going to cost them their lives because we got to have the stories. Superman's death, it was very well done. And it was fun to like, wow, what would the world be like without a Superman? Okay, it was fun to imagine that. Now let's get him back.
Yeah, exactly.
And then at that, we knew that was going to happen. Even when DC canceled all his titles for a few months in the 90s, you knew he was coming back.
The band.
And why? Because he's a moneymaker.
Yeah.
You know, if the Blue Beetle dies, 50 people care and that's about it. Sorry, Kellyanne. There's probably some Marvel heroes that if they died, I would care and maybe 10 other people, but then nobody else would.
I love that Blue Beetle that you pulled up.
I like Blue Beetle.
I love Blue Beetle. But Booster Gold. Oh, get the
Booster
movie.
Gold's even worse. I don't even know what he does.
That's what's so good about him. He's the hero from the future.
Yeah, he's from the future.
He's full of himself.
Okay.
It's Billy West that voices him. It's fantastic.
So, but with Gore, so I knew Gore wasn't going to be able to kill... The question was, who was Gore going to be able to kill? And then was it going to be one of the characters that we cared about? So that takes some of the tension out is you know, the only question at this point is, what is it going to cost Thor? Because this is Thor's movie.
Yeah.
And is it going to cost Jane? You know, is he going to kill Jane? I'm glad that when the way Jane died, it was more self-sacrificial than Gore managing to get it done and then Thor having to avenge him. But...
Well, but Thor was also looking for a purpose at the beginning. So I like that that's tied into it.
Well, now he has
a
purpose because he has the guy's kid. That's his purpose eventually.
Yes, but even the purpose of finding a mission when he splits away from the Guardians. Like, he was trying to find a purpose the God.
Well, but like, where does all this self-doubt come from? He had plenty of purpose in the first two Thor movies.
I think Thanos took it from him.
Yeah.
I think that people have talked about, like, when you get at the end of... you know, Endgame, and then it comes back to Infinity War. Each Avenger handles depression, those five different stages. And Thor's in denial.
Yeah.
And I think Captain America is showing acceptance. He's trying to move on. He's trying to move on. And I think Thor is in denial. I think he's the one I think took it the hardest because he felt like, I could have been the one. Yeah. I should have hit Thanos in the neck. And so I think he kind of lost some of his swagger. That's why what's interesting to me, when you said you didn't like that part in Ragnarok when he's spinning around and he's like, I'll be right back. I actually love that because I think at that point, Thor is super cocky. You know, he's cocky because he's using that because he hasn't been defeated yet. He's never really lost.
And things have always bounced back. Loki has come back.
Yes.
He's been able to go back. After being banished,
he has been defeated. Remember when he first tried to lift the hammer? That was like his lowest point because that was when he knew he wasn't worthy.
But
that was development.
Back.
That wasn't defeated. That was just, I think, more of a development because he had to become a better person. Then once he became worthy of that, he really didn't have any. He's Point Break. He's the most powerful, right? So.
The strongest Avenger.
And you know, his personality, he's kind of happy-go-lucky, even when hard things have happened to him. You know, my brother turned into snake and stabbed me. Haha, so funny. Things have always kind of worked out for him before. But then, like, he loses his mother. He loses his brother. He loses his father. He loses Asgard. Mm-hmm. Thanos. Everything kind of pulls him down. I think he's really doubting himself at this point, and he's trying to find purpose. And, you know, it goes back to, you know,
But he got that back in Endgame. That was part of the reason it was cool that he kept the fat body was because he was cool with where he was, and you know he was okay with Captain America. In fact, he was excited that Captain America could lift the hammer. Remember how he looked nervous the first time Captain America went to lift the hammer? By this point, he was like, "Yeah."
But he's still trying to deal with all those changes, and he still doesn't have Jean. We don't have Loki again. Like. He's still trying to deal with these changes in his life. And he's always had kind of the happy-go-lucky, golden retriever, happy personality type of thing. And now kind of life is really hitting him in the face after thousands of years.
Well, I think of almost all the Marvel movies, the one is in Infinity War is when he's talking to Rocket Raccoon. And there he is. And he finally, I feel like you are seeing Thor really talk about it. He talks about how he lost his mom, how he lost his dad. He goes, my brother. And then he's like, I lost my brother again. And he goes, I think my brother really is dead this time. And you could see that because I think Thor had been pushing that away. Mm-hmm. And you saw that coming through. I think he's learning. I think he's actually accepting that now. And he was dealing with that. And he was trying to do the best that he could do. And and so I think that's why he's a very fascinating character to me.
Yes.
So I like that.
And I think as someone who is essentially joyful like myself, but then also struggles with anxiety and cyclic depression and stuff. I liked kind of seeing that where he doesn't just keep going happy-go-lucky, but he does struggle with that and come out to a better point because of the experiences.
Yeah. But I got to say this.
And he accepts the tragedy.
And I don't know if you want to talk about this right now, but I loved how I didn't understand the title of Love and Thunder the last line of the movie.
Right. Loved it.
That's her name is Love.
Yes. I love that. Wonder, except the whole time when I was watching, they announced Love and Thunder. I assumed, I was like, hey, Thunder, Thor,
Love, Jane.
That's what it was. I thought they're going to explain
it. And it was kind of goofy and it felt like a Taika Waititi title of a movie about this.
Yes. But at the very end, find
Thunder, rock and roll. You know?
Gore, he wishes his daughter back. And he brings her and she comes back. But Gore dies because the sword has taken him. And he asks Thor, he's like, will you watch after her? And Thor does. And her name is Love. And that's the very end of the movie. You see them together. You have Love and Thunder. And I loved that. I thought that was so
You loved
amazing.
Love?
I love love. I like and I love love. I thought that was great. I didn't see that coming. So the whole time I thought I knew. So I was pleased with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. This seems like a natural place for a break because when we get back for the final segment, I want to talk about some different scenes. Like, let's dig into some scenes and explore. And then we'll talk about the post-credit scenes and what that sets up for the future and that awesomely hilarious cameo that half the people in the theater immediately recognized and the other half had to ask, why are you all reacting like that? So we'll do that when we get back here on Fan Effect. Fan Effect, final segment, Thor, Love, and Thunder. We've talked about a lot of the different segments, a lot of the different elements of the film, but now I want to dig into a few scenes that I thought were are worth discussing because I'm sure these things will be on people's minds after they have seen Thor, Love, and Thunder.
The disrobement.
The disrobement. But let's talk about the whole scene in the City of the Gods. So they go to the City of the Gods to ask for help. We need an army to help fight Gore. We can take him. He's just one, but if we can raise an army, we can do this. But when they get to the council, they weren't invited, and it's by invite only, so they have to beat up some other gods and wear their clothes and then sit in. And that leads to several hilarious things, not the least of which is Russell Crowe as Zeus.
Oh, my gosh.
I loved it.
And he's
got the curly, as curly a beard as he can have in live action that's not cartoon.
Yeah.
He enters. He's a big showman. He throws his thunderbolt around and, you know, he shows off. He's the big man. Everybody's cheering. Thor is a huge fan of Zeus.
Thor is fangirling so hard for Zeus. It was awesome.
The girls are like, we got to get down to business. Jane's like, I'm not going to wait any longer.
They're just ready to go.
And Korg is just along for the ride. Korg gives them They were talking. Who's talking while I'm talking?
They were.
I love it. But when they, I have to say this though, there was an audible when there's that scene because Thor gets chained up, right?
Yes.
Boom. And then Zeus comes along and he's like, let's find out who you are underneath that disguise. And what happens is, boom, flicks all clothes off. I was sitting next to Kelly and I heard an audible.
Did you not see that in the trailer?
I did, but still, it's on a very big screen.
Oh, that's a good point.
You guys are gonna embarrass
that's
yourself.
A good point. You know, Chris Hemsworth. This is a good thing he works out, right?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
He worked out more than any other film for this one, so.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, but the Saturday Night Live sketch, I can't recommend it to everybody, but it's a fake American Express commercial. I don't know if you remember, there's like a black and white and they have like some Hollywood actor that talks about something of this. And in his spoof, he's like, yeah, I know what it's like to be difficult. He's like, when I came to Hollywood, I had to walk around for 3 days before I landed a huge role.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really humbling when they said, well, I mean, we wanted someone to play Thor. We didn't actually expect an actual god to show up to the audition. And so,
perfect.
Yes. So there's the scene where he flicks away too much of the disguise and everyone gasps and all the girls' eyes go wide.
It's not even just the girl. So it shows the stage, the podium, Zeus there, all the girls, and even the guards who are holy spirits.
Some of the, Aphrodite had to be one of those.
They even got a little weak-kneed. It was, I mean, everybody was affected.
And Valkyrie's definitely bi because she was like, oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
so no, that was officially made in this. And then she kisses the girl's hand as they're escaping later. So the whole scene where we find out that the Council of the Gods isn't a whole lot better than the one that Gore had killed earlier, and they're not necessarily willing to help. Can we borrow your thunderbolt? Oh, you mean this thunderbolt?
They're very conceited.
And then they
conceited.
Have to steal it from him. But then Thor kills Zeus, or at least looks like he does.
Well, the thing about that
one surprised me. I was like, yeah, well, that's going to have some repercussions.
Yeah, that's going to reverberate. The whole time, though, is the irony is that they're there appealing to the gods, and the gods are doing exactly what Gore says they're going to do. They do not care.
Yeah, they're self-serving.
They do not. So everything that Gore has said is you're watching this come through, but Thor's still trying to do what's right. And like you said, and when he threw that thunderbolt at Zeus, I was shocked. The whole time I was like, that's going to affect everything. I mean, everything. Yeah. So,
powerful and like popular god, ooh, that would make everyone else mad as well.
Apparently, the only person who gets killed by a shot through the midsection is Qui-Gon Jinn because, like, everybody else seems to be surviving these things these days.
Did you ever see the old movie, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, The Last Action Hero?
Yeah.
When he gets shot and then they put him in the film and the doctor's like, what?
This isn't even a flesh wound.
It's not even a flesh wound. It's like he got shot to the chest. No big deal. So that's exactly true. So because he comes back at the end.
But he comes back at the end. And then we get the great cameo at the end with this didn't surprise me. Once we saw Zeus, I said, oh, we are going to get to see Hercules. When they first said Zeus was going to be in the movie, I wondered if we'd get to see Hercules in the movie. He's been a major member of the Avengers for years in the comics.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. And then and from what I saw in that final scene, his costume was comic accurate too.
Wow.
It's kind of like lots of skin bared, but with little green striping around the edges and this weird little head plate that he's got on.
Yeah, he always wears. But that's what, because Zeus says that, because at the very end in the post-credit scene, you see Zeus survived.
Right.
And then he's talking to somebody, but you don't know who, and he's like, you've got to go down and basically annihilate Thor.
When they don't pray to us anymore, they just look for the superheroes, which I thought was a funny commentary as well on things.
Yeah.
But he's like, but how are they going to feel when the thunder god comes falling from the sky?
Yeah.
You know, who are they going to pray to then? Well, they'll have to look back to us. And so, and then he stands up, yes, Father, and it's Brett Goldstein,
yes,
who plays Roy Kent on Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso.
Are we going to get our first F-bomb in a Marvel movie?
Yeah.
When Hercules
shows up. They're getting darker and darker every time.
We need Juno Temple, though, as some other character, yeah. though, that we got to complete the thing, or Jason Sudeikis. But
and it did say, though, like in the credits, it says Thor will return.
Mm-hmm. So it didn't say when
didn't
or
say
what.
Where,
yeah, didn't say when.
When
or what. But he's going to return, so we're going to get another Thor. I think they're setting it up for Hercules.
That's what
for
it looks
sure,
like, yeah.
For sure, for
yeah.
sure. But that's the question is, will that happen as a side quest in an Avengers movie, or will that will it be another Thor movie?
Series.
I'd like to hope so. You know, I don't care.
Really?
I don't mind having Taika Waititi come back, like do another movie. I'm okay with Taika Waititi doing this. I love Taika Waititi, and I love how funny he is. It just took me a bit to get used to Ragnarok, and this is another one where it was like, okay, I got to settle into the humor patterns, and, right. and it's good.
My only concern with Taika if he comes back is. It's this if they overplay it. It's the Adam Sandler problem, right? Ah. When first Adam Sandler came, it was so funny and everybody loved it. And they see it again; it's so funny. But now they got to the point where they're like, okay, we've seen the same shtick. We need something new.
You know, some of us don't get tired of that.
Oh, right.
I loved UV Halloween. It was like Avengers
I
Endgame.
I did like you. That is one
of Adam Sandler
I
movies.
Like.
I
oh
loved
my gosh.
It.
I worry that people might get a little tired of that. But I thought this movie was great. I'm pleased with it. It was a great movie. It was a perfect summer movie. Like you said, going back yeah. to the movie theaters and feeling be part of it again. And I just thought that it was fantastic for that exact reason.
I liked it as well, too. I think my biggest thing was there was so much kind of dark and horror mixed into it. It's great for grown-ups. It's great for those that are mature enough to it. But then I feel bad for kind of the younger individuals, like my niece and nephew, that are just they're just a little bit too young for this. I wish it would have been a little bit more broader.
How old are they?
9 and 10. And the 10-year-old probably totally could handle it. But there's a lot more swearing in this movie. There was a lot of kind of semi-sexual references, things like that, that would make it a little bit harder if you have smaller children.
Yeah,
I wish they would have not made it quite as dark and found a bit more of a skewed towards Ragnarok balance versus skewed towards like a Doctor Strange 2, I guess.
I mean, Doctor Strange was incredibly dark.
Wonderful. But you knew that. They kept put it
they,
out
they
as
told
lore.
People that. And I think some people were shocked by that, though. They're like, I can't believe how dark it was. This is not that dark.
No.
This is not that dark. But.
Although it does go black and white at one point.
It's
dark. Just terrified.
And the goats run into the moon.
the goats were never mentioned.
That was one of my favorite parts. I love it.
Did you know that those goats have names and they were in the comics, too?
Yeah.
Like, it's like it's a Toothbreaker.
Tooth Gnasher
and Tooth Grinder.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. And I love that they're pulling the
And they're screaming
the
goats,
ship.
Of course.
Yeah.
You could tell that the people on the planet were so happy to send them off with
That got a little annoying.
The screaming of the goats? That was the whole point. Point. That's
but
the
like,
whole point of the
as
goats.
As I was leaving, people were talking about that's the best part. I'm like, okay, to each their own.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it the best part, but it was funny. They were supposed to be annoying, and they were, to be fair.
Yep.
And I thought, I have to say, I forgot Skarsgård. Can't remember his
name. Dr. Selvig.
Yeah, he actually had a little brief little cameo again, too, which I thought
oh,
was
cool.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
he was talking to Jane.
She calls him when she's getting cancer treatment.
I thought it was nice that they brought him back with the little moments. I always liked his character when he interacted with Thor. So I thought it was fun to have him back. And I thought that they did really good fan service for setting up how amazing Thor was. I was wondering, the whole time, are they going to bring Loki? Is it going to be anything in there?
I was in my Loki dress hoping. Hoping.
Well, I heard somebody said that they thought that Hela was going to come back too. And I was like, how are they going to do that? So I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad they just focused on Thor and his story of what he's going through. I thought it was great.
Well, I like, you know, the serialized nature and that you always have to come up with another story. That's part of the reason that these characters come back. You know, you create a really good arc with a character. The only character I can think of that's had two really good arcs in a row where they saw that this first time was really well done. The only one that comes to my mind immediately is in Spider-Man. There was a stretch where he fought a guy named the Sin Eater. And it was a guy who he killed the police captain. And then he killed like a judge. And then he killed like a priest. And He wore a mask and he kind of looked like Storm Shadow from G.I. Joe, except his mask was green and he had like – and so Spider-Man has teamed up with this police detective Max, I can't remember Max, but anyway, him and Max are trying to solve this crime. And eventually, Spider-Man finds out that the Sin Eater is Max. The guy he's supposedly helping is the actual guy. And so Spider-Man loses it and he nearly beats him to death.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And then he takes him into, in fact, it's really only Daredevil that like talks him into, like, back off, sure. Man. You're going to kill this guy.
And cross the line.
And he feels like, you know, when it turns out Max had mental illness or something like that. And he tries to apologize. And Spider-Man's like, sorry, tell that to this person you killed. Tell this to the judge. Tell that to the priest. Or better yet, tell it to the captain. And like, so at any rate, that's the end of Sin Eater. It was a really compelling story arc. Years later, maybe 5 or 6 years later in the comics, Stan gets released from jail for some reason. And Spider-Man goes to like, oh, you think you're out?
Mm-hmm.
He goes to kind of threaten him. And when he finds him, like, he's got a stutter and he's got a limp and he uses a cane. And it's because Spider-Man beat him so bad, it caused brain damage and it physically scarred him mm-hmm. for life. And he's not even, he's like, no, it's okay, Spider-Man. I deserved it. And now Spider-Man suddenly is questioning his mm-hmm. own. So now he's fighting Electro and he can't. He can't get out of his own head. And Electro beats him for like the first time ever. And it's, so then it's like this whole crisis for Spider-Man. So this secondary arc of when the Sin Eater comes back and then eventually, you know, Stan, you keep seeing Sin Eater showing up in Stan's mind as he's tries to get a job. He can't get a job because he's a felon. He's going to fall behind on his rent. And meanwhile, the whole time, Sin Eater's like, Stan, we've still got work to do. Mm-hmm. And it was like two completely separate arcs that were so compelling and so good. And then at the end, he dresses up as Sin Eater so that the police will shoot him. Oh. And that finally puts to end his nightmare. And Spider-Man kind of gets his mojo back in, like, you know, You still got to try to do good, even though this happened. It's,
yeah.
Sorry, that was a long way to just get around to. It's okay, but it's hard to find multiple arcs in comics because when you keep bringing them back, it tends to sometimes dilute what made the first story or the second story so good. I don't know if Sin Eater's come back a third time. I mean, I don't know how he could. He's dead, but. If he did, it would dilute those two powerful mm-hmm. arcs. So I'm kind of with you, like. If they don't bring back Hela, I'm good with that. If they don't bring back, you know, Gore shouldn't be able to come back. I don't want necessarily to see these things just because we like them. I mean, that's kind of what we're getting in a lot of different fandoms mm-hmm. right now. We're going to get another Harry Potter movie sometime soon. We're going to get, you know, where it's actually the Harry Potter characters, not like Fantastic Beasts.
This, you know, I want to talk about FanX for just 1 second
Sure.
Here. Mm-hmm. The very first FanX that I was ever involved in, David Prowse was there, Darth Vader.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what you think, what you remember from seeing the movies, and I remember I met him for the first time, and he passed away shortly thereafter. And he was, you know, it made me a little sad because he was, you know, it wasn't Darth Vader how I remembered it. I think people want to go back and revisit characters all the time.
Yes, yes, we do.
Because
yes.
of nostalgia.
Yes.
But it's not always the right call. And sometimes I think that's what's happened sometimes with some of our other fandoms where they come back to they do this, but then it leaves us like, oh.
Dissatisfied.
Yeah.
Because it can't live up to what we built up in our mind. To me, it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
The way they used the legacy characters, it didn't work for me. Now that we've seen the sequel trilogy, there's a part of me that wishes they had just set Poe and Rey and Finn 10, 15 years even past that, where all the original characters have gone. We don't know how they died. They all died off screen.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a new generation. Maybe they're their descendants, sure. But
because
what you end up with is being dissatisfied. The Book of Boba Fett, for me, the show was like, eh, it was good. I didn't hate it, but it didn't really speak to me. But I was never a huge Boba Fett fan. So I was, but I know had friends who were Boba Fett fans that didn't like it because he didn't do all the cool things that they'd played with their figures and imagined in their minds for 40 years.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. It could never live up. But I thought I did want Hela to come back.
Did you really?
I did. Cause I liked her character. But I didn't feel cheated at all when this movie was over. I felt completely satisfied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was happy that Loki wasn't in it. Like, yeah. If they could have found a good way to put him in, he's a character that's kind of his nature is to survive things you can't think he'd survive.
Like,
they've done a good job with creating that as a part of his character. So if Loki ever shows up, and then we saw the planet full of Lokis, they didn't even die. They're all together on in the end game world. He's okay, but you know, at least we got to see that Heimdall's in Valhalla. So hopefully he won't come back from Valhalla, because I love Idris Elba, but okay, his character's on the arc. I'm okay with some people staying dead. I really am.
Absolutely.
I loved that they included Valhalla in that cutscene, because with all this talk about different gods and gods falling through, hypocriticalness, things like that, there was a Valhalla at the end, and Jane was able to be welcomed there. Heimdall was there.
But see, now they're going to have to get to Valhalla because Jane's got to come back, and so...
Yeah, Thor will eventually die, and they'll
I don't think she's
there.
Coming back.
I don't think she's coming back.
Because Natalie Portman...
Money talks, my friend. That's
true.
Money
But here's
talks.
The thing. So we have the big climax. They're finally at Eternity. It's a beautiful shot scene. There's the reflection and everything like that. And that's the moment when Gore, you know, asks... Thor and Jane's passing away. If I stopped, if I didn't keep going, what kind of father would I be? So even though we talked about this earlier, his motivation was love for his daughter, anger that she died and everything like that. Her love was also a big part of it. Her keep fighting and everything like that. Thor's love for her, keep fighting, everything like that. And he asks, you know, what do I seek? We all seek love. If we pulled Jane out of Valhalla and threw her back onto into mortal Earth in the same MCU, I think that would kind of undo that story arc, that feeling there. Like, she needs to stay.
No, I agree with you. That was my whole point of those story arcs and bringing people mm-hmm, back. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. But it's probably going to happen still.
Maybe. I have to say.
I think Natalie would stand up and be like, no, thank you.
I think for me, she was the real hero in the film.
100%.
Because really, Thor didn't stop it, right? He was mm-hmm. trying to, Gore won at the end, but she died.
Yeah.
And Gore recognized the pain that Thor was feeling because mm-hmm. he had felt that. Mm-hmm. And that's what changed his motivation right there at the very end. And that's what allowed him to make a different wish mm-hmm. instead. And so I think she was the one that really, she was the one that drove this whole story. It's the perfect ending for her. So, I mean, you never know what they'll do, but I think I love what they did with the character. I thought it was great. Because I was worried that they were going to shy away from the cancer whole thing. And I thought mm-hmm. they were going to make her, let the Mjolnir heal her. And I love that they went with it exactly how they did.
100%.
Okay, well, I have got the ace in the hole to play on the two of you.
All right, here we go.
Talk about, do you think that they'll mess with a perfect ending? I just have three words for you. Toy Story 4.
Oh, my gosh. That's a hard pill to swallow, isn't it?
I'm just saying, I actually didn't mind Toy Story 4. I've long argued that I think that the greatest ending to the Toy Story story, it would make it immortal in cinematic history, is if they had died in the incinerator. That would have made that movie immortal. Yeah, yeah. It would have been the bravest and boldest move you could ever make with a kid's movie, and it would have been an appropriate and a fitting ending.
Did you guys hear that thump? That was my jaw dropping. Can you imagine all the children leaving the theater?
I know. I know exactly what you're saying. It would make it the most scarring movie in history.
Here's the thing.
But that's why it would be so bold.
I'm trying so hard to stay here on Love and Thunder. You went down Star Wars. I could go days on Star Wars. I could talk hours on Toy Story 4.
Was my point. Was like that if you think Jane's safe because the story wrapped itself up well.
Yeah, well, I get what you're saying.
Toy Story 4, owned by the same company.
True.
So... that's the only thing I can say. I hope you're right, because I do like it when a story wraps up nicely.
Yes.
But I also enjoyed Toy Story 4. Maybe I'm weird, but I enjoyed Toy
Story
4.
I'm curious to see what they're going to do with the character of Love in the future films.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind like a little series with her in it.
So I'm curious to see what they're mm-hmm. going to do and how mm-hmm. they're going to handle that character. I wonder if they'll not put her in the fridge, but just be like, he'll just pass her off to somewhere and be like, okay, and then he'll go off.
Yeah, Fridge would be dead. That would be bad.
I think he'll go off and maybe do more adventures. But now he's...
If they killed her, that would completely defeat the whole purpose of Thor Love and Thunder.
All right, sorry, I'm like DC-minded. You guys know that.
Yeah,
So you have like the young Titans and things like that. Is there like a Young Avengers?
Yes, there's a Young Avengers.
Okay.
I don't know if she'll be part of it, but she certainly could be.
Okay, cool.
Does she have powers?
Yeah.
Yeah, because she was brought back by Eternity. She's embedded with power. So she had like the laser eyes and...
But if you...
Wasn't she holding something?
Yes, she was. She's also...
Stormbreaker.
He gave her Stormbreaker, right? Yeah. I assume that's what gave her the power.
Well, if you notice, it happened really quick. So the comic... book, the Eternity character, you saw that.
Yes. Oh, and that was one of the things I wanted to talk about before we were done, was they did a comic accurate Eternity.
Yes, they did.
I was very impressed with
that.
They
did that. But when, at the very end of the film, when she's there, you can see her reflection in the water. It's Eternity. Her reflection in the water.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Is the,
I noticed that, but yeah, I thought that was a cinematic choice.
No, it's the stars, it's the plant, it's the Eternity body in her. So she's got the power. She has... all the power.
She's definitely going to play some key role in the future thing.
She's going to have all the powers.
Maybe they do have to do another one. Let Jane be dead.
Just let Jane be dead.
And then, let me just say this.
Hashtag, let Jane stay dead. Kellyanne starting it.
I just have to say this real quickly right now, because I got to get this off. I felt like Bonnie should... She really disrespected Woody at the end of Toy Story 4.
No,
I just couldn't get
Toy Story came up.
Why would you bring that up? Why would you bring that up, Andy?
That's your favorite toy for like ages, and then you lose it. You're not just going to...
Well, she promises Andy, he's like, take care of Woody. And she's like, I'm going to. And then she doesn't.
And then
it really bothered
because
me.
Because the promise of a four-year-old is binding for eternity, and they never say things
you
that they forget about
this
later.
This is on you, pal. This is on you.
Hold on. Before I forget, can I say how delighted I am that they let Jane have more of a humorous side in this film? I loved how like witty and just humorous she was, how she was trying to figure out what her catchphrase was. Eat my hammer.
She couldn't get the right thing.
And when Gore calls,
and then we never get to find out what it is either, because she whispers it to Thor.
And then when Gore calls her Lady Thor, she's like, no, I am Mighty Thor, or you can call me Dr. Jane Foster. I love that.
Yes, that was a very female empowerment moment.
It's okay.
But legit. I mean, like, it's earned. Her character is all of those things.
Loved it.
So one of the things, I'm glad you brought this up, because I this is something I thought while I was watching the movie. I thought Natalie Portman was outstanding. Like,
so good.
She can play all the emotions. She can play all the facial, like... I think I tried to do something one time. I was like, what if I tried to act? Like, how would I do this? And I was like, I don't know how to portray anything besides enthusiasm and laughter. Like, I don't know how to do the other stuff. But she
so
can
good.
Be like,
wonderful.
She can switch from like Mighty Thor to like giggling girl to like all of it. Like, she can do all of the different emotions and scenes. Mm-hmm. And like,
and
you
like
could she could probably do it in one take
too.
Where she could be like, and this is me depressed. And then like be convincing just a short moment.
I think so.
And she did it. She did all of them.
Yeah. I think it was amazing. When you're a superhero, I think it's awesome to be that superhero. I thought the most poignant parts was when she was the cancer patient.
Yeah.
I thought the acting there was so good and so amazing that you did get sucked into that. You couldn't help it. And when Thor was talking to her at the end, and he told her, he's like, I love you. And she was talking to him. She's like, well, do you want me to be here? She's like, what's my future? Like, I thought it was so well done. And
I guess I don't want you here. You should die so Gore can make a better witch.
Yeah. Come here. And I loved what she did there with that character. I thought it was amazing. It was fun. And like you said, it was fun to go on the hero's journey with her, because after she defeats the first bad guy, she's kind of like hyper and like, just my first bad guys. And she's all excited, dancing around.
You never forget
your
first.
Yeah.
That was a loaded
and her
line.
And Valkyrie, just like knowing how to work with each other. It was so great.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a lot of fun. And like, she was like impatient when they visited the gods. We'll just go in there and we're going to kick some butt and we'll just take this. We're going.
I didn't hear you say go.
I thought Valkyrie was a little underused.
So,
I mean, for what? She was supposed to be like part of a troika, but she didn't do a lot.
I think that they used her for a lot for photo shoots, to have those amazing outfits when she was the president at the very beginning.
That
they
just was pretty funny.
Different outfits looking at her. But I think she was a little bit underused in what's going on there. But
I liked her. I thought she was supportive, and I liked that they had Siffin and everything like that. And you know, even though she lost her arm,
what was? Oh my gosh, I forgot. They even had the character Meeks. The
Meeks was there. Well, yeah, on the dry Meeks, board. The,
mm-hmm. He's supposed to be a. Well, what is he actually?
Like an insectoid alien.
Yeah, yeah, he was there for his brief moment.
He takes a heel turn in the comics. I wonder if they're going to do that in the show.
So yeah,
yeah. Well, he was the dead one. The Korg was carrying around.
Yeah.
He's alive. Look at that. And he takes notes on the whiteboard.
And I loved Korg narrating throughout it. That was a really fun one. Just to see him
listen
telling
up, young
the
ones.
Children.
Yes.
With his little New Zealand accent.
He went from dad bud to god bud.
Yeah.
It was so good.
I was going to say, I was going to repeat one of Peter Quill's lines, but I'll leave that for the movie. But when Thor clumsily says it to Jane later, how he wants to feel about her.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Which is a great
point. That goes well.
Which is a great point. Love is pain.
All right. So for me, I'm in about the 3-star range, somewhere between 2.5 and 3, probably 3 for Love and Thunder. Because it's not my favorite, but I liked it a lot. I liked it more than... And I liked it more than Ragnarok on first viewing because I was a little bit more ready for it this time. I didn't say I didn't like Ragnarok. It took me a couple viewings before I could really get into what it was doing, because I had to get over my expectations of Thor. And so now that this is my expectation of how Thor is going to be, it was a lot easier to take. It was a lot easier to take, yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like Taika Waititi, you're going to struggle watching this.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah, definitely.
If you didn't like Ragnarok, you will not like this one.
Mm-hmm.
I give this 3 stars, and it's something I enjoyed, and I'll watch it again. But I'm going to have to just say this, and I know that everybody's probably done this before. It's really hard this summer because when you walk out after seeing Maverick.
Oh, yes.
Everything compares to that.
Everything compares to that, and you can't do that. You can't do that, because that movie was the first movie. It's been years. The second it was done, I'm like, I want to go right back in theater and watch it again right now.
Yes, yes, yes.
Love and Thunder, I want to see it again, but it's not to the
Maverick. But you're like, I'll catch it on Disney Plus in a month.
Yeah, maybe. Freaking Toy Story 4. I can't believe you brought that up, Andy.
It's like...
Did I just tear open a wound?
It's too soon. It's too soon.
It's too soon after 5 years.
I wanted to like it more than I did like it. I still can't even pull apart what I didn't like as much about Love and Thunder. I think it's just definitely different. I loved where the characters go. I liked the humor in it. It was a little scary at times. I just wanted a little bit more of it. So it's almost like what you're saying. I just expected a little bit more.
Well, expectations often determine how we like movies because again, now we're going back to Top Gun Maverick. Mm-hmm. One of the weird movies that somehow lives up to the weird expectation that everybody's, it's the greatest. How many times have you been told something's the greatest and then you go and you're like, it's okay.
In-N-Out Burger, again, weeks anyone? After it came out, people were still cheering. Maybe that's what set the tone for me. I liked this a little bit more.
But I will say this, and this is something that I've kind of been mulling in my brain, and now that you guys have said this, it's kind of got it to the front. This is the first real original Avengers group post-Endgame where it's one of the Avengers that survived. So we've been waiting to see what's next for the characters that we invested 10 years of emotions into. And so maybe it's some of, okay, here we go again. I hope it's as good. And then there's kind of that little bit of a letdown of like, okay. And maybe on second or third viewings, you'll be like, okay, no, I like this better than I thought. And to be fair, these are movies. And I think we talked about this at the theater after we saw it. These are movies where we know going in, there's certain franchises where you're going to watch this movie 100 times. They know it's going to be watched 100 times, even if they hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be watched over and over again. And that's pressure on a director, I think, because they got to get a lot of things right because it's going to get dissected, you know? Something that comes out, Everything Everywhere All at Once, that caught a lot of people by surprise by how much they liked it because they had no expectations and it was good. I mean, it's those two things. But then if you make a Star Wars movie, you know you're going to get dissected on the internet with 1,000 YouTube videos within a day of it dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only going to multiply from there.
Yeah.
You're going to divide your fan base because you can never make everybody happy.
The problem with Star Wars fans, and I do this
too. I'm talking about Marvel too, because you can't make all the Marvel fans happy either.
I think sometimes we feel like we've grown up with it We feel that we
it's
know
ours.
Yeah, we feel, yeah, it's mine. Yeah, yeah. I know better than anybody else about this subject. And what I might like, other people might not like, and we have a hard time disassociating ourselves. I think Marvel is starting to get into that little area. It's been long enough that we're starting to. I still feel like this is a fun film, though.
Number 29.
Yeah,
that has to be factored in. For those of us who are, you know, older than maybe 12, we've invested more than a decade of our lives in this saga. So
and a lot
you
of us,
do take ownership.
A lot of us that kind of part of our personalities have been embedded into it, and like growing up with it as well has changed us as we've gone through growing up with it.
Never meet your heroes, they say.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. The older you get, every time you see your heroes again, you're meeting your heroes. Mm-hmm. Because I'm one of the few Last Jedi fans. Because I felt like that was a great representation. Rey to Luke was all of us who wanted to see Luke again after 40 years, and he didn't do what we wanted him to do, just like he didn't do what Rey wanted him to do. And so we hated that. So many of us hated that. And then I came around, and when I walked out of the theater the first time, I was like, I don't know, that didn't sit well with me. But then when I said, okay, that's what happened. It doesn't matter anymore. All my fan fiction stories are out the window. All of my imagining, all the toy play that I did is gone. Now, here's what I got. What was it? Now I go through the second time. And so, you know, sometimes you see a movie. I've seen Old Yeller once, and I'm good. I don't need to see it again. Right?
Yeah.
There might be people who dissect Old Yeller, but probably not. And so, but with a Marvel movie and a DC movie and a Harry Potter movie and, you know, these big intellectual properties, Star Trek, they're going to get dissected.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the best you can hope for is, did you like it more than you disliked it? If somehow they managed to hit a home run, bonus. I thought Obi-Wan was a home run, but there's lots of people who disagree with me.
Oh, I loved it.
Right, but there's a lot of people who disagree. So not everybody's going to like it no matter what.
Well, nobody's going to like everything you do. And I think Hollywood's completely aware of that fact, and they're trying to... They're going to the lowest common denominator, trying to make sure that the base, most of the people enjoy it. And I think that they actually did a better job here than some of the other Marvel movies, for sure.
Yep.
No, and I do want to say, I did like this movie. I just don't think I'll see it again in the theaters.
Okay, so let's play a quick ranking game.
Okay. Ugh.
Since Endgame, we've had Shang-Chi, Eternals, Black Widow, Thor Love and Thunder, and I'm not going to count the Spider-Man because... Technically, it's Sony, but let's go with Doctor Strange. So we got five movies. Rank the five.
Well, in my mind, the best one is Shang-Chi. That's my okay. I love that. I thought it was great. I thought it was fantastic. I love everything about it. If I was going from there, it would then probably be, I'm going to say Love and Thunder would be number four. I mean, number two.
Okay.
And then Doctor Strange is right behind that. And then Black Widow, and then Eternals is the last.
I feel like most people would probably rank Eternals last of those five.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would rank it.
I finally saw it.
What do you think, Kellyanne? What's your five? In what order?
Hold on. So I love Doctor Strange.
Okay.
I loved that one. I liked Black Widow, but also
so did
empowerment. Probably Love and Thunder. And then what was the other? Eternals at the bottom.
Shang-Chi.
And The Legend of the Ten Rings.
I need to rewatch it. I remember really liking it, but I think it was one of those I enjoyed it so much I can't remember
this, though? This is something here. Shang-Chi, when it came out, my mom is not a Marvel person or a fan or whatever, but she saw it and she loved it. She couldn't stop talking about that film. And so I thought that's a really good indicator that it's just a good movie in itself. We're not talking Marvel.
Yes.
They just enjoyed the movie. And so that's why this is really good. I loved it.
I think I just need to see that one again to really rate that one correctly. But definitely I love Doctor Strange 2. I loved Black Widow. Love and Thunder probably be under that. And then I tried to finish Eternals, and I don't think I did. I kept falling asleep.
Well, Eternals is number five for me. It's kind of jumbled the other four because I didn't dislike any of them. I didn't even dislike Eternals. It just didn't ring the bell for me.
I wasn't attached to the characters.
To me, as I was watching Eternals, I was like, oh, I'm watching the Justice League in Marvel.
Yeah.
And so for me, I mean, Thor Love and Thunder is right up there. I mean, obviously... No Way Home is like five steps above all of them.
All of them,
because that's one of my two favorite superhero movies of all time. Immediately,
yeah.
But I would go with, I really enjoyed Black Widow. Like, I watched it twice before it came out just to confirm that I enjoyed it. And I really liked that. So Black Widow, Love and Thunder are probably 1-2 for me in some order. And then Shang-Chi, because I enjoyed that. And then Doctor Strange. I like Doctor Strange, but it was a little bit of a step down. I was disappointed by how it wasn't something I could watch. I still haven't been able to watch it with my 9-year-old yet. Although now that it's on Disney Plus, we may give it a shot on a Saturday afternoon when it's on a smaller screen and a little bit more lit. But so that's interesting. But that's the thing. Now we have 29 movies to come from. One of them has to be number 29. And it could be one that's already out, but we could get one that drops down to, like, most people pick Dark World as the worst.
I think Eternals is worse than Dark World.
Okay. So that came out way after Dark World. So we could always get something that drops in the lower. The more you have of something, the more you have to compare.
It's just like it's like a beauty pageant, right? There's going to be one winner, and then a lot of people are going to lose. Right?
That's
true. It's just how it's going to happen.
And it's kind of dependent on your taste.
It really is, 100%.
You're second place, so you're the first loser.
Yeah. So, and that's what if you start ranking the 29, I mean, people are going to have different points of view on that. But there are some of these movies that are just fantastically made.
Yeah.
So.
All right, so that was our thoughts. Thor, Love, and Thunder. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Why don't you go to our Facebook page and tell us your thoughts after you listen to the podcast and join in with any other conversation. We want to thank you for listening to this episode of Fan Effect, a KSL News Radio podcast. Beyond sci-fi, fantasy, gaming, and tech, we are always excited to share with you our knowledge and arguments on everything pop culture and fandom. We're based in the beautiful Beehive State of Utah. Fan Effect celebrates our unique fan culture, and we're excited to bring you local guests who feel the same way. Guests like Chris Provost. Chris, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Love your insights. What's our next Disney movie?
Oh, there's all of them.
All of them.
Coming out.
Elements and...
So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry we haven't had you
Hocus
on sooner.
Hocus Pocus
2.
I know.
But you guys can talk all you want about Hocus Pocus 2. I'll just sit and laugh.
I want to come in here and talk Star Wars with you sometime because we could go into deep cuts of that.
I
love
it. I want to be a fly on the wall with you and Dan Spindle.
We could go all day about that.
You three would be amazing.
We may have to do a supersized State of Star Wars podcast.
I would love to. Absolutely love to.
All right. Well, I'm your host, Andy Farnsworth. And Kellyanne Alverson, co-host. Kellyanne,
hi.
Always a pleasure to have you. Listen regularly on your favorite platform at kslnewsradio.com or on the KSL News Radio app. Do you have a fun idea or local fan culture topic you'd like us to explore? Tell us on our Facebook page at Fan Effect Show. That's EFFECT, where you can also get the latest nerdly updates and join in the conversation. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Fan Effect Show. And thanks again for listening. Hope to have you back real soon for another episode of Fan Effect.
Such a hypocrite. You just said off air that Toy Story 4 is your favorite. Andy, how could you say that?
I never said Toy Story 4 was my favorite.
Toy Story 2
is my favorite.
He just said it, but he didn't have the mics on. We all heard it.
Oh, now look at this. Look at this sabotage.